You're listening to the Wednesday Afternoon Show. I'm Laura. I'm always keen to get out of the studio and to see what this wonderful island of ours has to offer in way of attractions, organisations, inspirational businesses. This week, we went to Butterfly World. We were given a tour by Adam and Eloise, really, really passionate lepidopterists. What that means to you and I is butterfly enthusiasts. Adam has been working at the exhibit for 10 years and is such a fountain of knowledge about all of the species. And when he's not giving tours in the greenhouse, when he's not guiding people through all the wonderful specimens, he's studying them.
Yeah. My name's Adam Barron. I've been working here for 10 years on Isle of Wight Butterfly World and Fountain World, establishing a tropical environment for everyone to enjoy. This is the butterfly area, so this is where people come to enjoy many different species of tropical butterflies, the life cycles, and we educate, me and Eloise here, educate customers on the life cycle of butterflies through the egg, caterpillar, pupae stage and the emerger. Many different insects around, stick insects, praying mantises, tarantulas, which everyone likes. Not
and we point the trencher out if we see one.
Yeah, well, as you walk around you will see that. Gosh. Can't miss it.
Wow. And how many different species of butterflies do you have?
32, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, 32.
And what do they range from? Are they natives and tropical, or is this completely a tropical area?
Yeah, mainly tropical. We get the odd kind of native one sneak in, but the only one we do see in England is like the monarch and the lime, isn't it? Lime swallowtail. But rest of them are from Africa, Asia, North America, South America, those kind of places.
Yeah. How warm is it in here? What kind of temperature and humidity are we talking?
We try and keep the temperature averaged out at 80 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm not going to lie, it gets warmer than that constantly, and it sometimes gets cooler. But we have the heating system set up correctly at the right degree to keep the temperature balanced. The humidity we try and keep at an average of about 75 to 80%, but it doesn't need to be humid for the way the breathing spiracles work on the butterflies, but we try and keep the humidity more for the pupae stage and the caterpillar shedding process. The pupae stage works like this. So the caterpillars, the eggs are laid on the host plant. Caterpillars hatch out from the eggs. In front of us, we have Aristocleae, just at the entrance of Butterfly World. We are breeding the pipevine swallowtails at the moment. So the eggs are situated on the vegetation. The caterpillars emerge in 3 weeks, and they just spend their entire life devouring that vegetation. As you can see, it's been eaten quite badly. As they eat the plant, they're stacking all of the proteins inside their body, building up the hormone levels till they can't keep that state of mind anymore. Then they pupate. Once they pupate, they break all their body structure down into fluid. Then they become the adult butterfly as the cell structure and the temperature around them starts making the actual process happen. It's called metamorphosis. It's a fantastic structure to study, I'm not going to lie. But the idea is that it is a four-stage cycle. The caterpillars start first, then the butterfly comes afterwards.
Amazing. Right, should we go for a little wander?
So as you go around, we have feeding stations established, which, as you can see, the owl butterfly loving the fruit there. And they always do. The owl butterfly is known to get drunk.
Yeah.
On its fruit. So we just let the fruit ferment, softer fruits and solid fruits together, allowing them somewhere to stand while they're drinking.
So they're going to the bar, basically.
They're pretty much going to the bar. It's hilarious.
Can you describe this butterfly to us? Because it's quite large, isn't it? How big would you say it is?
So the owl butterfly is one of our largest species in here. It is approximately 4 to 5 inches in wingspan across when it opens up. Females ranging up to 8 inches in wingspan as it ranges.
Wow.
The eye on the side is meant to design to protect them. So as a predator swoops into the jungle, these specimens use the large eye to mimic the owl perfectly. So they think, whoa, hang on a sec, that's not what I intend to eat. And they normally freak the predator away. So their whole body structure is set in stone from the moment they hatch out the pupae, but they can damage themselves. You see old age here as they wear their wings out.
Yeah.
Now, these species are known in the world to live on plantations in Brazil, and they can become a pest specimen. You'll see
go along, they're just destroyed.
Really?
Yeah.
Literally.
Ravaged by the butterfly?
Yeah, 100%. So the owl butterfly, though, in generosity, because of that structure and where it's one of the only butterflies in here that feeds solely on fruit rather than nectar, they can live anywhere up to 12 months of the year. It's quite a long time.
This is a really idyllic place to walk through, isn't it, number one? And then you see these beautiful, like, floating creatures, the butterflies, they're just everywhere.
That's one of my favourite specimens.
Oh, which one?
Just sitting in front of you is the emerald green swallowtail.
Oh, that is really stunning.
The reason it's one of my favourites is because it's confused me for the first 2 years of me working here.
Yeah.
You see it as green.
Uh-huh.
If you drop next to that butterfly and dip just below that bench line, you'll see it change turquoise blue.
Ah, is it iridescent?
It's an iridescent specimen. And we know iridescent butterflies shine. Their wing structure bends light and shines. That butterfly is actually orange.
No.
Mm-hmm.
What, so if I went low right now?
You'd see it change blue.
I'm going. Oh, yes.
You'll never see the orange. You only see the orange when it hatches out.
Really?
Using pigmentated scales and photonic scales that bends light.
And where is that native to, that butterfly?
Asia.
Asia.
Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia.
And what about, you've got, okay, this one fluttering very gently, black with yellow bits at the side.
That's the female egg fly.
Okay.
Male specimens of the egg fly family have little purple spots, and me and Eloise know them to be a little bit aggressive.
Really?
They're territorial.
Yeah, they'll fight off anyone that comes near them.
Including big people.
Yeah, humans and other butterflies.
You've got to give it to them, being so delicate and beautiful looking, but they're really feisty.
Yeah, really feisty.
And so have you got eggs laid at the moment on various shrubs and plants?
Yes, as we go around, you'll see some more eggs as we go. We have special host plants dotted around sites. We spread them across the exhibit.
Yeah.
That way, customers, if they've missed them at the entrance or halfway through, they can still see them at the end, and vice versa. So we have them all over the exhibit, just so you can sort of see them as you go.
Great. Shall we trot on? Oh, this is a really magical place, isn't it? So what are you doing, Eloise? You're on the floor looking through the bushes.
To show you.
Oh, okay. And what kind of caterpillars would they be?
These would be kind of variations of swallowtails and mormons as well.
So is that an egg, a tiny egg, and that's a pupae?
A caterpillar.
Oh, it's so well camouflaged. So tell us about this caterpillar. Can you describe what it looks like to our listeners at home?
Okay, so these caterpillars here are part of the swallowtail species. Swallowtail species of caterpillar look identical for the first process of their life, mimicking bird droppings.
Definitely.
Yep. If you notice, the only defense mechanism these guys actually have inside their body is called osmeterium. So osmeterium, when provoked, two little horns shoot out the top of their head, slightly different colored, sometimes clear, yellow, orange, or red.
Yeah.
And they emit a smell, a chemical, which when it hits our nasal gland, it smells a little bit sweet, but it is a smell which is repulsive to us, makes us feel a bit giddy. The egg here is yellow.
Yeah.
The egg will darken off to a brown-orange tinge and then go slightly blacker the more it's going to hatch out.
Okay.
So that's the idea. When looking at the egg structures, you can see the colour change and you can see the timing in that colour change to tell and determine when it's going to emerge.
Yeah.
The caterpillars normally spend about 3 weeks eating as much food as they can, growing bigger. Swallowtails are known to change colour and structure as they shed.
Okay.
So they'll start life as a bird dropping, then they'll go into a large green specimen with false eyes on the side of the head, mimicking snakes.
What's the plant that they prefer most?
So their main food source in the world is citrus, lemons, oranges, but we don't feed them on that here.
Yeah.
We feed them on choicea and skimmia.
Okay. And how long are they in the egg stage for?
Three weeks.
And then how long as a caterpillar?
3 weeks.
Okay.
3 weeks as the pupae, in theory, meant to live.
Yeah.
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
But they don't. They live a lot longer.
Yeah. And particularly, you don't have any predators in here, or do you? Does your tarantula have a go at the butterflies?
No, she does try.
Do you have to, do you have many tarantulas, or just the one?
Just the one.
And what's her name?
Sienna.
Is she a friendly tarantula?
Sort of.
Yeah.
And yeah, she has her grumpy moments, but.
And how big is she?
She's about the size of my hand.
Yeah. Did she come in here by mistake, or
no,
was she intended?
She was my mum's kind of ex pet. So.
Okay, so she's found a new lease of life.
Rehomed in here, yeah.
Wow, what a life to have.
Yeah, she's got a nice tank. She likes to dig in holes.
So she's in a tank?
Yes.
Okay, because I was expecting to see something, you know, her dangling down in front of my face or something. So it's a really magical experience walking through the greenhouse, in effect. It's completely tropical, so very hot, so don't wear too many clothes. And there are these a huge amount of beautiful specimens just floating past. I've had a couple of butterflies fly into me, the dopier ones. There are ponds, and just a really lovely, abundant mixture and variety of shrubs and plants. So we've just come to the side of the greenhouse, and there are butterfly emerging cases. So Adam, tell us more about what's happening in these cases.
So this is the emerging cages. Every pupae you see exhibited in sight behind the netting has been flown in from the country of origin.
Right.
We do a small order each week just to bring the bloodlines in line, because we self-suffice our breeding stock anyway. We breed excess amounts in here constantly through the year. We normally have to top the bloodlines up to make sure they're pure. That way the numbers can even out. So we normally bring 100 to 150 in, depending on time of year. Not many, the most places do, but enough just to keep it in balance. And if you look closely, we put the species together. So all the different types are together here, because when one hatches, they give off a chemical, they excrete the excess fluid from metamorphosis. As it evaporates through the air, it goes through the porous skin next to them of species which haven't hatched out, and it speeds the process along.
Isn't nature just amazing?
Yep, she's fantastic. She's set herself up so it's an even balance across the land. That way she keeps things in check.
Yes. Some of your pupae are moving as well, so they haven't emerged, but you've got tiny bits of movement.
Yes. So that's actually an activation of the labial pulp. So on the anatomy of butterflies, we love teaching the schools that come through to us the anatomy of butterflies, because they're completely random. Yeah. They smell their antennae. They hear of their wings. They taste of their feet. The labial pulp is what's activated in the pupae stage as it designs itself in metamorphosis, and it actually activates as a vibrationary field tracker.
Right.
Meaning as we're speaking here in front of the cages, our sound waves are bouncing off the pupae and they're twitching to be part of the vegetation, blending in.
Oh, wow.
It's quite amazing. For them, they don't realise that they're inside the butterfly world on the Isle of Wight. They still think they're in the wild out in Asia.
Yeah.
We're actually watching them doing their natural elements in here, which is quite sweet.
And so you've got a variety of colours as well, camouflage, would you say?
Yep.
So you've got kind of tropical green, which is very pretty, and then one that looks a bit like an oak leaf.
Yep.
So really beautifully camouflaged. And then, so this butterfly has emerged and is just hanging out. What butterfly is that?
Sweet, that's a new specimen.
Yeah.
So that one is a false tiger. What it is there's certain specimens that come through each year, especially now it's August.
Yeah.
So now it's a summer holiday for us over here. We get different ranges. The butterfly stock that comes through regularly is fluctuant, meaning we don't know what species are going to come from one month to the next. But what I've done over the years is I've worked out a lineage of where they do come and what we get more of.
Yeah.
So what you'll find now is we'll get some of the rarest specimens sent straight from Africa, which is warmer environment, warmer conditions to survive in. These ones are the false tigers. They actually mimic the plain tiger butterfly of Africa, okay. But they actually hatch out of an egg fly pupae.
Oh.
So they're using the mimicry process in their blood and their design to mimic the egg fly pupae, so they can actually pupae amongst them specimens in Africa. When they hatch out, completely look like a different specimen, so they don't get eaten. They can survive.
And then the one next to it is black and white.
That's a little tiny wood nymph.
A wood nymph?
Little wood nymph.
Where does the wood nymph come from?
Again, most of our specimens on site come from Asia. So
okay.
Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia.
Some beautiful places tropical
like that.
Places.
Yeah. We have some which come from South America, some North America. South American specimens are your owls and your big blue morphos, which are around here. You can't miss them, they're bright blue.
And how big are they?
They are averaging just underneath the size of the owl. So they're about sort of 4 to 5 inches. And the big females we've had this year, which is quite impressive, they can average about 6 inches. Quite cool.
They're so delicate when they flutter past. I've had a couple fly into me. And so obviously you've got a sign saying don't touch the butterflies, because we can damage the wings, can't we?
Yeah.
The scales. If I was going to come and I'd like, you know, some butterflies to land on me, what colour clothing would you say I should wear?
Okay, so understanding butterflies and their anatomy, we understand what colours they see in.
Yeah.
So the main colours we know they see in is whites, purples, blues, yellows and reds. Through study, though, of the eye structure of butterflies, I've found that the Chinese done an experiment where they done colour coordination of fruit dishes.
Yeah.
They let go in a experimentation effect where they let butterflies go, which could see what colours they're attracted to. They found out that the only butterflies in the world that went to red was swallowtails.
Okay.
So I always encourage kids and stuff that come in and want them to land on you to wear red. Through observance in here for the last 5 years, red has been one of the best colours to wear because we do more swallowtail species than every species, and it is true. They have an extra 200 lenses in the eye, giving them extra 200 fractals to bend light round, making red an actual given colour they see.
Fascinating. Because this is so fascinating, isn't it? You have wonderful jobs.
It is the best job.
And I've just seen out the back, the corner of my eye, you've got little, what are these little creatures?
Chinese painted quails.
How many quails approximately do you have?
Ten.
So is this all to build your ecosystem? So are they keeping the bugs down?
Yes. Yeah. They eat ants, and ants are kind of one of the only predators the butterflies face in here.
Okay.
So they're the only one we can't really get rid of because chemicals and stuff you can't use.
And is that because ants would attack the eggs and the caterpillars?
They'll eat anything, so they'll just swarm and just whatever they swarm, they'll eat. So.
So do you have butterflies in particular that are attracted to the kind of more watery environment?
So butterflies do take a vast array of food sources in to survive. At the end of the day, their whole anatomy is keyed about restocking the fluid inside. Now they've gone through metamorphosis change, they don't take solid food source like plants, they take a liquid food source, which is nectar, fruit juice, and actual water, minerals in the water and in the soil. So we know that the big blue butterflies on site here, which everyone tries to photograph, but never does. Their wings are always held closed. But for observation, since I started, the blue ones always land on the water, which is why we grow so many aquatic plants.
Yeah.
They land on the aquatic plants, put their proboscis in the water, and as they take the fluid in, we observe them excreting the fluid out the other side, and it does a detox. And it's actually, through theory, meant to allow them to live double their life, which is true.
Yeah. And dragonflies?
Yep, we have loads of little damselflies in here.
Little damselflies.
They've been breeding in here since I started 10 years ago, and we've kept them ever since. The damselflies are quite sweet because they do, again, pick up small bugs like ants. Yeah. Because they're flying, unlike the birds, the non-flight birds, because the damselflies fly, they'll pick up insects like amoebae bugs, red spider mite, any pests that actually attack our plants.
Okay.
So at the same time, the birds are down low looking after butterflies, and the damselflies are high up looking after vegetation.
Fascinating. Tell me what these are. So what's this plant, first of all?
So this is what we call Thalia. Thalia is known to us as aquatic canna lily. So when we understand the owl butterfly we saw feeding on the fruit at the entrance, these are the owl butterfly caterpillars. They're quite fierce looking.
They've got spikes.
Spikes, spiky heads. They look a little bit like dragons. They're quite cool.
They do. They look very thorny as well, and that's obviously their camouflage.
And their defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Their spines are meant to induce a stinging sensation, so things tend to leave them alone.
Oh, wow.
But these caterpillars are harmless. What they do have equipped is what we call a formic acid cannon. So just in the underside of their body, they have a formic acid gland, which excretes formic acid to burn the skin.
Brilliant.
Doesn't hurt us, though.
No.
It's okay. Now, these caterpillars feed on Thalia, but their main food source, as we explained, is bananas. They come from banana plantain in Brazil. But because canna lily, Thalia, bird of paradise, they are related to bananas in a way.
Yeah.
These specimens in here can go for a wide range of food source, making them one of our prolific specimens we breed.
Okay. So you've got some brown thorny ones, but you've also got some green ones which are camouflaged perfectly with the stem. What are those?
So they're the young. So the younger they are, when they hatch out, they're white. They're only about sort of 3 mil in size, a little brown head. And as they grow gracefully on the vegetation, they change to this beautiful greeny-yellow hue.
Yeah.
Little brown dashes in the middle, and their head just becomes slightly smaller until eventually they become these beautiful, huge brown caterpillars.
Yeah.
They are actually still babies. They get about 6 inches long, dark brown like slugs, and their head looks like it detaches from the body, a little bit alien-like. But when they're full-grown, they're such sweet specimens.
And this one, I'm just looking at one, he looks like he's got two kind of antlers coming out the front of his head.
That's his spines on top. What it is when the natural world, most predators attack the head.
Oh, Oh, I see.
So that's the weakest point. So that's why the cannon is just underneath the throat, just on this specimen. The head is more spikier. So if something were to, like a bird, swoop in and grab it, that's where it'll excrete into the mouth and become dangerous to absorb.
Acidic.
Yeah.
Would they be poisonous or they're just acidic, so taste nasty?
Yep, not poisonous at all. Because they're feeding a non-toxic plant, these caterpillars are non-poisonous.
Okay. So can you tell us, for the listeners at home, if they want to encourage butterflies in their gardens, you know, David Attenborough is doing his butterfly count at the minute. What can we plant and what can we do for butterflies?
So plants that encourage them to our country, things like buddleia, verbena, things like ceanothus for an early flowering plant. Always use things like honeysuckle or scented plants at night time, like evening primrose for moth specimens, because a lot of people focus on the butterflies but forget moths are the biggest family of Lepidoptera. We have in the world to date 24,000 butterflies.
Yeah.
We have in England about sort of 59 specimens of that, but moths exceed 365,000 species in the world.
Wow.
So we've got to really cater for both sides. So for butterflies, things like ceanothus, verbena, buddleia, cuffia, hebe, plants which are nice shrubs which you can grow, keep nice and deadheaded to make sure there's plenty of prolific flowers growing. And sedum's always one for the autumn.
Okay.
Ice plant or sedum is one we always grow for the autumn because it flowers in September, giving them that last bit of energy they need to migrate either back to country of origin, because a lot of English species come from Europe, or also giving them time to store the energy to hibernate through in our country, where they tuck up in garden sheds, greenhouses, conservatories, and just go asleep for the winter.
Okay, so what do you do if you're in your shed and you find a sleeping butterfly?
So if you're in your shed and you find a sleeping butterfly, what I normally advise is leave it alone. Leave it be, it's okay where it is. You'll normally find it might try and wake up when it warms up, because we do have sometimes sunny spell in the wintertime. It's rare, but we do get it. And all it is keep it where it is. Never think it's flying and let it out the window.
Right.
It's only just woken up. It will go back to sleep when it cools down that night. Okay? A lot of people make the mistake and let it go. And the downside you're doing is you've now just released it out into an environment where it's not equipped for. And predators at that time, which are bird life, are going to need a high lot of protein for themselves to stay warm. So they're going to pick that specimen straight up as a dinner.
So leave a sleeping butterfly.
Yeah. If it does wake up and you're cautious though, my only advice to give is a piece of soft fruit or sugar water, and that allows it to have a little bit of drink before it goes back to bed.
Oh, lovely. Ooh, just had a flyby. Who flew by then?
That's the lime swallowtail.
Lime swallowtail.
They're beautiful. Like the caterpillars we saw on the choicea back at the beginning, that was one of them species.
Mm. Okay, so what do we have here, Adam?
So on this banana palm, again, we have the owl butterfly, but on this particular plant at the exit side, we have a beautiful fresh pupae. It has pupated its skin approximately 3 days ago, and we now leave it there.
Yeah.
A lot of people think we take our pupae off our plant vegetation and put them in the pupae cages, but we don't. We allow you to see best of both worlds. What that means is that we leave all of our pupae naturally on the vegetation their pupae on, so as you walk past and observe, you can see how nature does the process.
Yeah.
If you look closely, the butterfly excretes a small thread of silk just on the base plant. When it sheds its skin upwards in its final design to make the pupae design, it actually attaches itself onto that thread of silk with the abdomen hairs, and it's like Velcro, locks it in place, so this becomes really hard to pull off. Putting slight pressure on that, it's bending the plant rather than coming off the stick, therefore it's secure.
Yeah.
So we just leave that be, and in approximately 3 weeks' time, it'll hatch out.
And then you've also got an owl caterpillar as well.
Nice owl caterpillars here. One shed its skin next to it. There's a slight sub-adult just next to that, big and brown. You now see the head larger.
He does it like a dragon.
Does look like a dragon. And if you look closely, thousands of eggs dotted just over the plant.
Oh, yes.
So never worry, we do have enough food source on site naturally to cater for everything we breed.
Yeah.
And if food is running scarce, we actually have plants outside the exhibit which we normally bring in, allowing to keep breeding.
Okay.
We never let anything go to waste.
The tour that we've just done, absolutely fascinating. And you're currently being harassed by a butterfly.
Yeah.
Tell me about this butterfly who's just fluttering around you.
That is a gold-rimmed swallowtail. Fluttering past me because it wants to possibly mate. They get confused, I'm not going to lie. And sometimes they actually lay eggs on us.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes she'll get a bit confused and they'll actually lay eggs on you.
Really?
Never worry if something lays eggs on you. Just literally get a member of staff. We'll take them straight off.
Yeah.
They're not going to cause any harm.
No. Really phenomenal. You guys, thank you so much for the tour. It's been so interesting. And you're just a fountain of knowledge.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Walking through the exhibit is a little bit like tumbling down Alice in Wonderland's rabbit hole. The place is a really, really idyllic, beautiful walk. And these huge butterflies kind of tumble into you. And you get the teeny weeny ones flutter past. And it's a very peaceful place. If you look close enough, as you will have heard, you'll be able to see the various eggs that have been laid. You'll be able to spot the pupae or even the caterpillars. And the exhibit in the future will be having guided tours, which is an absolutely invaluable way to introduce yourself and your family into this magical, most wonderful world of butterflies, where Mother Nature has kind of gone, I know, I'm going to think of some crazy things. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to create iridescent butterflies who emerge orange, but you'll never see the orange again. And in fact, are they blue? Are they green? I'm going to make a butterfly here through its wings. I'm going to create a tiny little caterpillar that produces horns that shoot acid to keep it safe. Stay tuned. We've got more exciting things coming up on the Wednesday afternoon show. You are listening to Vectis Radio. We're a community radio station run by volunteers. And if you'd like to volunteer, please get in contact. Email us at studio@vectisradio.fm. And I'm always on the lookout for recommendations of attractions, businesses, organisations, charities to come and visit and interview for the Wednesday afternoon show. I really want to showcase what the island has to offer and all of the inspirational activities that happen on it, led by fascinating people. If you have a recommendation for me, please email studio@vectisradio.fm, entitle it for Laura, and let me know and I can come and do a little piece at your place. You're listening to the Wednesday afternoon show. I'm Laura. I'm always keen to get out of the studio and to see what this wonderful island of ours has to offer in way of attractions, organisations, inspirational businesses. This week, we went to Butterfly World. We were given a tour by Adam and Eloise, really, really passionate lepidopterists. What that means to you and I is butterfly enthusiasts. Adam has been working at the exhibit for 10 years and is such a fountain of knowledge about all of the species. And when he's not giving tours in the greenhouse, when he's not guiding people through all the wonderful specimens, he's studying them.
Yeah. My name's Adam Barron. I've been working here for 10 years on Isle of Wight Butterfly World and Fountain World, establishing a tropical environment for everyone.
What was your background, Adam?
My background has been studying entomology and animals on this planet since I was six. I've always grown up with animals around me. My father's always grown up teaching me about livestock and showing me the process of nature and how nature works. So it's just been in my blood and DNA to do something like this. My dream's always been to run or own a butterfly farm, either on the island or the mainland, and to actually move to the island a few years ago and be able to work in one of these places. I've been able to give my knowledge to the customers and share what I've learned since I was young with everyone else. It's sweet.
We've just got some people taking photos. So this is one of the emerald green swallowtails. And she's looking totally tropically green. I'm just going to the floor to see if she's blue. I can't get the blue yet. The mechanism of iridescence is just amazing, isn't it? The way the scales are formed to put the light bounces off them.
Yeah, through study we understand the big blue butterflies in here are actually green. And when I studied the wing structure, because each year I normally pick a subject myself and pull it apart, meaning like I study it to know everything about that section. So many years ago, I'd done the wing structure, I'd done the scale structure, and it's fantastic to watch the blues. What it is their little tiny dust particle of scale is designed like a prism. 1 nanocentimeter apart grooves carved into the scale itself, that when the light shines across the wing surface, it actually takes yellow light away, leaving the blue in replace of the green blood that's underneath. So they're green, the light comes in. With the way the nanostructures are designed, the yellow light gets stripped off of the wing structure, just leaving blue in replace. So it's really good.
What do you think that's for? Is that for attracting mates?
Natural camouflage.
Natural camouflage?
Yeah, natural camouflage.
A predator from above will see one type of camouflage, underneath a different type.
So for the emerald green swallowtail here, I can actually show you. In respect to swallowtails, they always pupate on trunks, on the actual branches of plants. So as a green pupae, they'll blend in as a leaf stuck to the actual vegetation. Then when they hatch out, that orange wing structure will replace the background, making them blend in.
Okay.
Once their wings are unfolded, which normally takes about 10-15 minutes, they'll climb out onto the vegetation, now sitting bright green onto the leaves, so they blend in. And then when they take flight, because they're lifting their wing structure up at the right angle of about 40 degrees, they change blue, which blends in the sky.
Oh my goodness.
That's the idea. So the emerald green swallowtail has one of them butterflies which has completely thought out the process fully. So it has pigmentated scales locked into place with iridescent scales. Most butterflies either have one or the other. This is the only specimen I've dealt with that has both. Using the actual cameras, I have taken some where you've got half blue and half green wing.
Oh, gosh.
If you get the right angle in here with the emerald green, you can do it where you can actually take half and half. I've got a couple.
I know these guys. You have got stick insects. I used to have stick insects. In fact, I had two. And then one day I woke up and they'd had babies. And there were just tiny little babies everywhere. Yes. Yeah, tons of them. So what do you feed these guys?
So these specimens are the Indian stick insects. They feed mainly in captivity on privet. We have loads of privet bushes in here for the breeding of our butterflies. So we just literally harvest excess privet that we've got to trim down anyway and feed these stick insects on that.
And have you had the larger ones for quite some time?
This stock is a bloodline which has run in here for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
And they're breeding ever so gracefully each season. We have at least, I always tell the kids to count, we have at least about 200 babies in there hatched out 4 days ago.
Oh, they're so cute, aren't they?
It's awesome. And we love the stick insect for the process of understanding parthenogenesis.
Yeah.
Most people go, what's that? Parthenogenesis is the process of self-cloning. What that means is in stick insect families, the large majority of them actually don't need a mate to mate with.
Okay.
They will use, the female will use the energy inside her own body to actually fertilize the egg to hatch out. So it's a duplicate clone of the female.
Yeah.
What that normally does though is it normally lasts about 5 or 6 generations. Because it's a self-clone, it does weaken the bloodline.
Right.
So nature's got an added bonus. What nature's put into effect is that if the egg is in temperatures of 84 degrees Fahrenheit, that egg will change naturally into a male specimen regardless of a clone or not.
See?
Therefore, it will put a male back into the bloodline to then reproduce again to make it pure.
I'm just shocked by that because nature is just marvellous. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
It is awesome, isn't it?
At the end of the day, we can't fault nature. We just have to study her.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, so this is what we call a grapevine corner. A grapevine corner is designed to be a slightly cooler environment for the moth specimens we normally exhibit.
Okay.
So the cocoons in front of us on this stand are called Atlas moth. They're the largest moth on the planet. They average on a male process of 6 inches, a female process of 12 inch in wingspan.
Gosh.
That's huge.
Yeah.
So when we have them exhibit in here, the downside of the Atlas moth family or the silk moth family is they have no proboscis.
Right.
What that means is they have no mouth to feed with, which is quite bad in respects to keeping them living a long time.
Yeah.
So they normally live averagely to about 7 days for a male and 14 days for a female.
Yeah.
Our record on site is to exceed a month, which is quite cool.
Yeah.
And they're one of the largest, most graceful specimens we exhibit on site.
Yeah.
The only downside in the world at the moment is that the Saturni farms in Thailand and Philippines have taken a hit.
Really?
Yeah. With the environmental changes that are going on this planet, some things like this are taking hits out there. Which is a shame.
Yeah.
And we always promote learning things on site. So when people come into us, we'll always educate customers not only on the species we have on site, but on the whole family of Lepidoptera across the earth. We always try and give you conservation efforts to help them in our own country of origin,
yeah,
as well as foreign countries, and explain why things are going wrong.
Yeah.
The Atlas moth here is quite a sweet specimen because we know so much about them, and we've kept them in process a long time because we use silk as a byproduct.
I see.
Yeah.
So those... Are they made of silk?
These are natural silk cocoons.
Wow. Wow, that's stunning, isn't it?
It is beautiful.
So can you just describe how big is this?
So these silk cocoons are captive bred. All that means is sometimes captives are larger. So this cocoon is about 2 inches in size. The pupa is sitting just inside, hatched out.
Okay.
Okay, so that's an empty one.
Yeah.
This silk is made up of 1,000 of silk gland. So it produces saliva, solidifies the atmosphere, and that basically makes a thread, which stretches several thousand miles in length.
My goodness.
We unstrand it nicely by boiling it, and we turn this thread into a clove sauce.
Wow.
It's soft, durable. We know that it keeps you light, cool.
Yeah.
It keeps you warm. But the best thing about silk is it holds not a single cell of bacteria.
Okay. How come?
Because the way it's designed from the saliva gland, as it spits, the caterpillar spits, as it solidifies, if you look, it creates this waxy sheen.
Yeah.
That waxy sheen is actually a protection, which means bacteria sticks to it, but as soon as you blow it or dunk it in water, it just comes straight off. So, of course, when you manufacture that into a clove sauce and you walk in the jungle, studying new species out in the field, you can walk through areas of bacteria, get it all over your clothes. But when you go back to camp, wash your clothes in a clean bowl of water, fold them up, and you're not transmitting disease around the world.
Brilliant.
It's beautiful.
That is
it
amazing.
Is expensive.
Yes. Well,
it is expensive.
It's very time-consuming.
Yeah, but it is the best stuff around.
And so where do you... What do you do with the silk? So you make... Do you pass this on? Do you sell this on?
So we normally keep these cocoons as processes for art colleges, kids that come through for show and tell. We give them away. But I would like to set something up on site which shows you how silk is manufactured.
Yeah.
Give you some idea of how we can turn this cocoon, this solid cocoon, into a silk thread, back into a cloth, which we can use for bandages, clothes, and things.
All natural made.
So the actual worm itself, the silkworm caterpillar, what it is just as it's about to pupate, all silk moths do is they'll just hang themselves in the vegetation and they'll excrete silk out their saliva gland and just create this huge ball of silk they're sitting in. What it does is that protects them through the winter time. So when it gets cooler, that allows them to insulate through, keep themselves warm as a caterpillar, 9 times out of 10 having an antifreeze compound in their own blood to keep them through the winter, allow them to hatch out. All we do is once the specimen's hatched out, we take that empty cocoon, put it into a vat of boiling water, allowing that silk to become light and threadable, wind it onto bobbings, and then use it as a clove sauce.
Absolutely amazing. Because they say, don't they, for insulation, you should wear a layer of silk under everything else. As you've said, warm in the winter and very cool in the summer.
Yep.
I could be wearing some silk right now because I'm so hot. You should definitely... Oh, can you imagine silk uniforms? You'd be looking like butterflies yourself.
It'd be fantastic.